right. Are we here?
The show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not. It's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Here's your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right. Hi, and welcome to the premiere of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, or at least the live premiere, on the Head On Radio Network. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man. Voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. And again, the URL for my personal site for the show is cupojoe.blogspot.com. And of course, you're all here listening to me on the Head On Radio Network. And I want to say hi to everyone who's listening to my pre-recorded shows. And hi to all my fans of the blog, and for just people who are listening for the first time, and also my chatters on the Barktop chat room and on the My Left Wing chat room. No, I'm not on the Head On chat room because they use Java, and Java would mess things up for me right now. So if you want to call in a little later on, I'm not taking calls right this second, but the number, of course, is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON or 1-877-443-2366. And before I do anything else, I just want to say some thanks to people. Since this is the premiere show, I wanted to say some thanks to people who have made this show possible. First and foremost, I want to thank Bob Kincaid and his lovely wife Agnes, or Agnes Kincaid and her lovely husband Bob, depending on who you're talking to, for producing the show out there in West Virginia. And I've never been out there, but I'll have to go and visit sometime. Of course, Ben Birch at the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org, which is an awesome, awesome site, archiving not only my show, but many, many other shows, including Bob Kincaid and all the other people on the Head On Radio Network. And Bob just finished a fundraiser, by the way, or excuse me, Ben just finished a fundraiser, by the way, and that was great, but that doesn't mean you can't stop in and drop a few pennies in the bucket for him, or a few dollars in the bucket for him, or a few dollars for me, too, if you want to go on my site and donate some money. I also need to thank the anonymous donor who donated my new microphone and my new mixer. My old microphone and mixer were okay for what I used to do, but in order to do live radio like this, I needed something with a little bit better quality, and this was a person who just recently started hearing the show and liked it so much that he asked how he could help out. So I can say, well, I say he, but it really could be a she. I'm not really saying. The person works in as a contractor, so he said he's not allowed to speak out, but he likes what I say, so I'm glad for that. I want to thank all my fellow hosts on the Head On Radio Network, Bruce Birch of All Things Reconsidered, John Fox, who does Fourth Estate Radio with Bruce, Grace and Rama from Hone Bodies, and, of course, the aforementioned Bob Kincaid from Head On Radio. My name is Joe Vecchio, and I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and I figure if I'm going to be doing the show, since this is my first show and some of you are new listeners, I figured I should let you know who I am, why I'm doing the show, and why I believe what I believe. Like I said, I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm kind of the black sheep of the family because I always had problems holding on to jobs, and I'm always short of money. I'm just one of those person that always seems to have a problem with it. It comes into my pocket, and it's just gone. It's just gone, and I never know where it goes half the time. But because of that, I'm kind of the black sheep of the family. And why I'm doing this and why I did the Cup of Joe show is because, like so many other people, I simply feel compelled to do it. With all the things that are going on, with all the things that are happening, excuse me, professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. Let me get a little drink here. Hang on. This is professional radio. For those of you who don't know what I'm drinking, it's just water. So get your minds out of the gutter. It's just water. Actually, I don't even have my Mountain Dew right now. I do this, like I'm saying, because like so many other people, I simply feel compelled to do it. With all the things that are going on in this country and around the world, I feel the need to speak out on it. And I do so on this show now, and I've been doing the pre-recorded shows. I did 113 pre-recorded shows going back over a year and a half, which is actually not a bad record for somebody who was doing it for absolutely nothing. And now I also do the daily reports, which if you listen to Bob Kincaid, Head-On Radio, you've been hearing them every day. And I think they also have them on a few of the other shows. I think All Things Reconsidered and Fourth Estate Radio picked them up as well. And, of course, I'm hoping to get them on more. They're two-minute little drops every day, Monday through Friday. Now, I say I'm the voice of the working man, and I mean it. I am just a regular working guy. I don't have a college degree, never been to college, high school graduate. I come from a real working class family. And I've never made a lot of money. I've never made more than $23,500 a year in my life. And in the last few years, things have been even worse for me because I had a wife who was very ill, my beautiful, lovely wife, Catherine, who passed away in September. And I was busy taking care of her last year, so I didn't really have much of a chance to go out looking for work or doing the job thing. But it did give me the opportunity to stay at home, when I came back from the hospital to concentrate on this. Why am I a liberal? Why is anybody a liberal? Why is anybody a conservative? Well, I have personal reasons for that. And that's just the thing. Why people believe what they believe is very important. It's just, you know, people don't come to these things out of a vacuum. People believe what they believe for particular reasons. I think a lot of people are conservatives and Republicans in particular because they're greedy SOBs and they're just looking for an excuse to justify that. That's not true of all of them. Some people who call themselves conservatives are true conservatives in the sense that they just think that what happened in the past, you know, is worthwhile and we should listen to that. And to a certain extent, I agree, but the Republican Party is hardly what you'd call conservative. They're just a bunch, like I said, greedy SOBs who are about to rob every cent they can possibly get. I'm a liberal because I'm the kind of guy who understands that without the social contract, without the social infrastructure that supports me, I probably wouldn't survive very easily. I'm not very quick on my feet as far as financial stuff is concerned, but I need this to survive. And I need to live in a kind of society that can support someone like me, because quite frankly, I don't want to live in the kind of world that the Republican people want us to live in. They're always looking for competition. They're always looking to fight amongst each other back and forth for all that money. And I just don't want to do that. I don't want to live in that kind of world where everything is the bottom line. Everything is how much money you've got. And I understand what liberalism is and what its origins are. I mean, liberalism, like with anything else, liberalism did not come out of a vacuum. Liberalism started as a response to extreme circumstances. And modern liberalism, as we know it, actually got its start back in the days after the Civil War. And it's been evolving since then. And it reached its heyday with the New Deal in 1932. And let me say this, because this is very important for me. Unlike right-wing talk show hosts, I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. I don't just say something to get a rise out of people. I'm not saying I'm always right, but I'm always honest. I'm honest with you, and I'm honest with myself. And for those of you who will be calling in, I expect you to be the same way. You want to disagree with me, fine. I love disagreeing. I love discussing and learning through the conflict of ideas and learning new things. I love that. But as long as I can help it, I won't have any Republican trolls come here on this show, on my show, and cause trouble. You come on here looking to have an open discussion about politics and policies, I got no problems. But if you're just looking for a fight, just for the sake of looking for a fight, look elsewhere, because I'm not going to tolerate it. And I've got a temper, and if you rouse that temper, I will jump you like you've never been jumped on before. And I hope you all understand that. Again, that doesn't mean conservatives are not welcome here. That just means that you need to behave yourself. And if you give Republican talking points, I'm just not going to tolerate it. You want to speak intelligently, that's fine. Like I mentioned earlier with Ben Birch on the White Rose Society, he had a fundraiser. I, too, am having a fundraiser. Doing this show and doing the daily reports takes time, and I have to go to work right now in order to support myself, which is fine. I don't mind working, but it does take a lot of time away for me to do the reports and to do the show, and every little bit helps. So if you want to go on my blog, that's cupojoe.blogspot.com, and drop a little dime in the bucket every now and then, please feel free to do so, because I can use all the help I can get all the time. So anyway, here we are. It's my first live show, and I'm really kind of at a loss right now because I've never done this live before. Usually when I do a pre-recorded show, I have the advantage of just being able to stop and say, okay, that sucked, and move on to something else. Or just stop recording and record over it and mix everything together. Here, I really can't do that. You know, I kind of got to be who I am and worry about time and watch everything as it goes along. So it's going to be new for me, and the show's going to take some unexpected twists and turns. But you know something? That's okay. Because when things get a little too slick, it's not as much fun, you know. And I was going to introduce her a little later, but you know what? I'm going to go ahead and introduce her now. And she's a friend of mine from the Howard Dean campaign, and she's a political activist. We've only got a couple of minutes here, but this way I can introduce you and get out of the way. And I hope the voice works, if people can hear. I want to introduce Phyllis Huster, who has been an activist in the gay and lesbian community, but also mainly from CountPaperBallots.com, a big election reform website. Phyllis, welcome to the show.
Hi, Joe, and congratulations on your first live show.
Great, thank you.
I'm so excited for you.
And,
we bought, you know, $50 worth of radio stuff.
Well, you know, we got to get this stuff going, and we had to get Skype up and running, and do a lot of different things. So,
you did a great job at the April 1st peace rally, recording everyone from Mike Malloy to Kurt Thompson of Gwinnett County Representative. You did a great job. So kudos on that.
Well, I was glad for that, and you know, I was glad to talk to Mike in particular because I hadn't seen him in a long time, and he's on AAR right now. And he's doing pretty well there, so I'm very happy for him. He used to be on WSB, and he got kicked off there for being liberal, which is pretty typical with the way things are these days. What was it they did on MSNBC? Was it MSNBC that had Phil Donahue on it? He was like their highest-rated show, and they dumped him because they were worried about political things. And what did they replace him with? Who was that conservative schmuck they replaced him with? Oh, Dennis Miller, who used to be funny. You know, and this is something I want to bring up. But, you know, Dennis Miller used to be funny. I used to watch Saturday Night Live in the 80s when he was on, just to hear him. Just to hear him do Weekend Update, because he was almost as good as Jon Stewart is now. Jon Stewart's a lot funnier. But he was it back then. But I don't know what happened with him. I don't know what made him turn into a conservative nut job. But, I don't know. He just lost it. And they gave him a show on there, and I think that's bomb, too. I don't think that's on the air, is it?
Nothing he's done has been successful. I mean, no way, you know? It's like, yeah, he doesn't have nearly the popularity of Jon Stewart.
Well,
what's great about Jon is he appeals to everyone.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, I got on his case a little bit the other day because he was kind of ragging on Cynthia McKinney.
You know what? Can I tell you something, Joe?
Mm.
I've heard a black R&B radio station ragging on her. I heard Q105 in Atlanta ragging on her. Is anyone ragging on Bush for basically being the one to tell Cheney, to tell Libby to out a CIA agent, which, by the way, is treason? You do not out CIA agents. That is, by all means, he should be impeached just on that. Who's complaining about Bush right now? Nobody. The White House press corps took a day to even ask about Bush being behind the whole Valerie Plame outing.
Well, we're going to talk about that.
It's crazy.
In a little while later on in the show. We've got some other stuff going on. So, and, you know, there's a lot of things going on. There's so many things I could possibly talk about, but we're going to concentrate on a couple of things. The Cynthia McKinney thing I want to talk about.
Good. Let's talk about it.
So, in the meantime, let's go to a break, and we'll play the promos. God, that echo sounds weird. I'm so not used to this. Okay, we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe radio show on the Head On Radio Network.
know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with Ethel Raisin Walnut Chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not
there.
The same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. And we're here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're here with Phyllis Euster. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi, Joe. How's it going?
Pretty good, and I'm glad you're here with me because I was a little nervous getting started on this. You know, and it's been kind of an interesting week because I had to do my job, and I can't speak about my job right now because of what the job I'm doing. But
or else you'll have to kill people.
I'll have to kill people,
yeah.
And I've been doing the job, and that's been taking a lot of time away from me. Actually, I didn't even get the daily report out on Friday, and I needed to. Are you messing with the microphone there? What are you doing?
No,
you?
My headphones. I can't hear, but that's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
We're still having some little technical issues here, but we'll deal with that in the future. You know, when Bush took over the White House, and you'll notice I'll never say elected, he made a big stink about having a squeaky clean administration and that he wouldn't even tolerate the appearance of impropriety among his staff. But as with so many other things, he was just lying through his teeth. This is one of the most corrupt political machines we've ever seen in this country. Now, I've heard a few people talk about comparisons with Tammany Hall. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Tammany, and by the way, I am kind of a student of history. I'm not going to say I'm an expert, but I do like history. I do like reading about it, and I'm a little more well-read than other people. But Tammany Hall, for those of you who aren't familiar with this, basically ruled New York City for more than a century. They were the poster child for corrupt political administrations. And their most notorious figure was a guy by the name of Boss Tweed, who was imprisoned eventually for corruption. In fact, he wound up dying in prison. But here's the deal. There's a difference between Tammany Hall and the current Republican political machine of today. And the thing of that is that Tammany Hall, while they were corrupt and while a lot of people knew they were corrupt, they were still extremely popular among people. Why? Because they actually did things to help people out. And this is an extremely important distinction, and I'm going to make that a little clearer now. What they did was they got immigrants who just came in, and at the time when they were getting into their heyday, we're talking about maybe 6 or 7 million people coming into the country. And they helped them out. They helped them get jobs. They helped them apply for citizenships. And they made sure they knew who to vote for. That was the thing. They made sure they always voted for Tammany Hall politicians. They gave them food. They gave them clothes. They gave them fuel in emergencies. They helped them out if they had troubles with their landlord or the police. In other words, they made a real difference in people's lives, in people's everyday, regular lives, in a way that nobody else was doing back then. This is long before the New Deal came around. Sure, the leadership was in it for themselves. They wanted the money, and they certainly lived high off the hog. But they understood that it was important to spread the wealth around a bit. So even though a lot of people knew what was going on, they still supported Tammany because of the good things that they did for them. I'm not trying to romanticize it. I'm not trying to justify it. That's just how it was. Phyllis, you're kind of, you know a little bit about
Tammany. I do know about Tammany Hall.
And again, I'm not trying to say that they were, you know, nice people. And I'm sure there were a lot of, you know, really nasty things they did, up to including murder, I'm sure, to a certain extent. The reason why they were supported and the reason why they stayed around for so long was because of what they did for people. And the reason why they went out of business in that sense eventually was not because of all the corruption, but because of the New Deal. The New Deal made public all those things that were going on. Hey, you know what? I've got my first phone call here, and we're going to go ahead and take this. We've got Jim from Beckley. Jim, welcome to the Cup of Joe show.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Fine. How are you? You sound great.
Good. I hear you 5x5.
Great.
Listen, I want to tell you, I enjoy your very much so the dance that Bob Kincaid plays during his show during the week, and I couldn't agree with you more, really. So you have nothing to fear from me as far as any Republican talking points, okay?
Oh, well, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay. But, you know, if you were mentioning the New Deal, and I'm history is an avocation of mine. There's my major in college, too. And I'm retired civil service, DOD, so, and I have worked in government, and I've seen a lot of stuff go on. And with this administration, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it's almost like the Fuhrer state, you know?
Well, you know what you have, essentially, and this is just being nice. I'm just being as nice as possible here. You have a bunch of people running the government who hate the very idea of government, and that's the real problem there.
Well, I mean, you know, I heard Ronald Reagan, they play these recordings of Ronald Reagan, that the trouble with government is government and all this kinds of stuff. And I don't know whether they're trying to resurrect that old carcass or not, but it's terrible.
But well, you know, the thing about Reagan, I'm sorry, go ahead.
They were talking about, you know, he would always say the worst enemy that we have is government. And, you know, how
well, Reagan was partly right. Reagan was partly right.
Yeah, his government.
His government, exactly. Governments are the problem.
Exactly, his government and supply-side economics and all that other crap that he tried to force-feed down other people's throats.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the way I feel. I know you got a lot of callers, and I'm not going to take much of your time. I feel about Bush the way Churchill felt about Adolf Hitler. And it's the honest truth. You know, when and Churchill said, if Hitler were to invade hell, I would make common cause with the devil to run his ass out of there.
There you go.
That's the way I feel.
You know, Churchill was a conservative, but he's one of the few conservatives that I actually admire because he really honestly believed in what he said, and he was a highly intelligent person.
Oh, yeah, he was.
And I remember, well, I don't remember personally, but I've read his great speech to the House of Commons practically begging the United States to get involved. He asked the New World to save the old, and I'm wondering if we're going to have to call upon the Old World to return the favor one of these
days. Save the new.
Yeah.
I mean, where Lafayette, where are you now that we need you?
Exactly.
Listen, well, Joe, I've enjoyed talking to you, and I wish you the very best with your show and the continuation of your programs, okay?
Thank you very much, Jim. Glad to have you on.
God bless.
That was Jim Beckley, ladies and gentlemen. That was, you know, this is new for me. You know, actually, I swore up and down that I would never take phone calls.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. You're good at it.
Well, I try to make a good conversation, and that's what this is about. You know, and I like to talk about that. Now, you know, the thing about that, I mean, he was right about, you know, Reagan and all that. And here's the thing about the Republican leadership. They don't do a damn thing for working people. They never have since at least since I've known them. The only people they serve are very, very few rich people who already have more than they need or deserve. And because these people have got so much money, they have far more influence in politics than they should. Because we're talking about maybe 1% of the population. Not even that.
Well, even that, it's crony rich people. So of the rich segment, it's only the friends of theirs. So for every company like Halliburton they're giving a contract to, they're shutting out 20 other companies that have a fair chance of doing an RFP and winning that contract. So they're really pissing off a wide segment, even of the rich community.
Right, right. And you know what they're good at? And here's the thing, what they're good at, they're good at acting like a protection racket. You know, they either exaggerate or just outright invent enemies and tell people that we're the ones who are protecting you. You know, the Republicans have been doing this for more than half a century. First it was commies, you know, the whole Joe McCarthy thing, and they were doing that long beforehand, but McCarthy kind of brought it all into a big focus. And, of course, it was the first time the Republicans had controlled the Senate since the New Deal. And as soon as they got their hands on the power, what do? They use it to go after people, right? Now it's liberals and terrorists. They were always after the liberals anyway, but back then they couldn't do anything about it because even the conservative presidents were kind of liberal. Eisenhower, who is one of my favorite presidents, I think he was very underrated. He was still very much a liberal. I mean, the Federal Highway Program was started under him, and he was the one who gave the great speech about watching out for the military-industrial complex. So, you know, back then it was a different world, but now the inmates have basically taken over the asylum. And, you know, now that they got you scared, they're ripping you off. I mean, what's the price of gas nowadays? What is it? Here is just over $2.50 a gallon, right? Which is 2.5 times what it was in 2001 when Bush and his people took over. And, of course, the oil companies are making 2.5 times the profits. So what a coincidence. You know what I mean? Yeah. What a coincidence. And who's getting most of this money? And someone, who was it that pointed out, it was Greg Pallas, who said that what's going on in Iraq is quite possibly is what it's like Goldfinger. You ever see Goldfinger? You remember what Goldfinger's crime was? They thought he was trying to steal the gold at Fort Knox, but that's not what he wanted to do. He wanted to irradiate it with a nuclear weapon so that it would be useless and therefore drive up the value of his own gold. And Mr. Pallas wrote that what the Bush people are doing is intentionally making things nasty in Iraq so that their oil won't flood the market and that the oil from Saudi Arabia and the oil that we control is more valuable. So, you know, we're dealing with criminals in a James Bond movie, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we're dealing with.
Well, my question, Joe, is how long do the masses have to put up with this before they do something about it? We don't have representative government. We have a controlled Supreme Court, a Republican-controlled Senate and House. We have nothing but pansies on the Democratic side of the aisle as well as the Republicans. Nobody's doing anything about Bush, and yet he's got all these criminal behaviors going on that he should be tried before at least the International Criminal Court, if not some citizen should do a citizen arrest. I mean, the guy is just totally belongs in jail.
Well, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to do anything about that right now. And it's a question of an article I wrote several years ago called Waiting for the River to Catch Fire, where I talked about the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland that was dumped with pollution, and nobody wanted to do anything about it until the river literally caught fire. That was back in the mid-70s, and the federal government had to come in and clean things up. So, anyway, let's take a little break, and we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Bedtime song. Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORA-KID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
In the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air. And it was good. Once, Planet Check. Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel man.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Head on. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no Oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7.06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
We're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. And once again, we're here on the Head On Radio Network. And if you want to call in, the number is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And we welcome your calls, as always. No trolls. No trolls and no Klingons. No Klingons. That's my other rule. Why? I don't know. I just made it up.
Hey, I like Klingons.
Well, what was that old joke about why is the Enterprise like a roll of toilet paper? They both circle Uranus looking for Klingons. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be here all week. Hey, just yesterday, we were talking about the Bush administration and the corruption in the Republican Congress, well, all over the Republican Party, whether you're talking about the administration in particular or the Republican leadership in general. There's so much corruption and so much crime. And just yesterday we got the news, wasn't a surprise to me, that Mr. Bush himself authorized the leaking of Valerie Plame, and you were talking about that, to the press for purely political reasons, which in my opinion, is an impeachable offense because, you know, by outing Ms. Plame, who was an undercover CIA operative, regardless of what the right wing tries to tell you of her position.
Who cares if she was a desk job?
Yeah.
She was a CIA agent. If I were in the CIA, I'd be really pissed right now.
Right. And she was a really undercover person. She was doing some very important work, and they outed her, which not only endangered her life, but endangered the lives of everybody that she worked with. And
she was working on Iran. Did you know that?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the big new news, is that she was working on weapons of mass destruction and other nuclear programs in Iran.
Sure. And this by itself, this is an impeachable offense. You know, it's a high crime and misdemeanor. It's a threat to national security. But, of course, you're not going to see any of this from the rubber stamp Congress. And
can't even censure. They can't even join Feingold for censuring.
And the Democrats won't
everything
do it either. And that's just the thing. The Democrats didn't join him either. And you're not going to see them do...
But I'm with Feingold. What Bush did is worse than Watergate, what Nixon did. What Bush did is he's dismantling all the laws of the system that make up a democracy. He's dismantled the Constitution. He's dismantled a independent three-branch system into a single branch. It's huge.
Well, Mr. Bush's claimed powers of a dictator. I mean, what was it, the McCain law or the thing that McCain tried to get passed? And I'm not a big fan of McCain either. We'll talk about him some other time. But the one about increasing the rules for how we torture people, Bush immediately wrote a signing statement saying basically, well, you know, if I don't feel the law is good, I'm not gonna follow it. And that's, you know, that's even if he never uses it, that's claiming the powers of a dictator.
Well, you remember what he said behind closed doors about the Constitution?
Oh yeah. Don't say the words though. Oh no, that was what he said about Saddam. He said it's just a piece of paper, right?
It's a stupid piece.
It's just a stupid piece of paper.
Why should I be held accountable to this stupid?
You know, and that's his attitude. I mean, he's part of a group of people who simply believes that he is absolutely
white boy.
Yeah, he's you know, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And he honestly believes that. Now let's take. And by the way, you know, even if the Democrats manage by some miracle to take control of the Congress in 06, which by the way they won't. And
it'll
be a
whole new crew of people.
Yeah.
I think.
But
independence.
They won't take it over. But even if they get into control, they wouldn't be able to do what needs to be done. They wouldn't back Feingold on censure. They all ran away from him. They're all running away from Cynthia McKinney now when they should be backing her. You know?
Cynthia McKinney thing is really simple, but I'll wait till you.
Well, yeah,
get
we're
to
gonna
her.
We're gonna talk about
it's
that a little bit. But
formula.
But it's the whole problem with the Democratic leadership is that they simply won't stand up and fight. And it really angers me, but there's not much we can do about it except to fight the system and take them over slowly but surely. And you know what I keep telling the bloggers and stuff like that or other people? Say, look, it takes about 30 years to build a progressive movement. Like I said about the liberal movement as we know it, liberalism as we know it, really began in the days after the Civil War. And it took them about 30 years to reach their first fruition. That was under Teddy Roosevelt and the Progressive Republicans. And they did their thing, and then when Teddy left, it took about 30 years for the progressives to get back in full swing with the New Deal. And in between that time, of course, there was all sorts of nastiness going on. Nobody out here listening, I doubt very much anybody out there listening is old enough to actually remember the New Deal. My father did. My father used to talk to me about that. And what happened before, the depression that happened before then, but it was really, really nasty. A lot of people don't understand how close we came to an actual communist revolution in this country. And it was Roosevelt and the New Deal people that changed that by taking a more moderate tone. Now,
one thing about the progressives, though, Joe, it may take 30 years, but we raised more money with Howard Dean, and Kerry went into the Iowa and the New Hampshire caucuses with no money at all. He had to take out a loan on his house because he had raised no money at all.
Yeah.
The progressive raised, 20, 30 million. I know that Dean had more money than anybody ever collected in any Democratic presidential, and he was a dark horse candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So the progressives raised more money. I think that we have more power. The problem is we don't have a representative elected government. So all bets are off after that.
Well, you know, the Democratic leadership, you know, torpedoed Dean. But let's get back to Republicans here for a second because, like I said earlier, when Bush came into office, he promised that there wouldn't even be the appearance of impropriety. And yet this has become one of the most corrupt and investigated political administrations in history. I mean, more so than Reagan. Reagan was until then the one before. They tried to say Clinton, but you know what? Very few people in the Clinton administration actually got convicted or indicted for much of anything. And a lot of the feces that were tossed on them just failed to stick. And it wasn't because of Teflon, it was because there was nothing there. So, and again, you know, we heard from Bush. Karl Rove, who was the political guru behind Mr. Bush, he's also under investigation in the Plame affair because a lot of, you know that anything Bush knows, Karl knows. And what was it I read somewhere about one guy talking to another guy and said, you couldn't possibly know anything I don't know. And I think that's where it is with Karl and Mr. Bush. Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, Scooter Liberty, was indicted on felony charges of obstruction of justice, perjury, and making false statements in the Plame investigation. Tom DeLay, former House leader for the Republicans, is under indictment and resigned from Congress on Tuesday. Senate Republican Majority Leader Bill Frist is under investigation for possible securities violation regarding his stock in the company his family founded. I mean, we're talking to major people here. Those five people that I just mentioned, Bush, Rove, Cheney, DeLay, and Frist, these are the five most powerful people in the Republican Party. So we're not talking about a few little flunkies here. These are the five big people in the Republican Party. You know, and I've got a whole list here of people. Ken Lay is on trial right now for what he did during Enron. And a lot of people forget that, what happened, because it happened so long ago, but it was still there. And a lot of people's lives got ruined. And I wonder how many of those Enron employees voted for Republicans back then, and I wonder how many are still voting for Republicans now. That's what I want to know, because, you know, there are people who would do that. They still vote for them.
To watch your entire 401k get flushed down the toilet when you bust your buns for 20 years for a company. I saw that happen at Lucent, Telcordia, AT&T, during the dot-com revolution.
And they froze them out. They wouldn't let them do anything.
$500,000 in their account to $20,000. But the one thing I was going to tell you is a lot of liberals are depressed and they think things are not moving quickly. What people need to remember, even Howard Dean said this to me, the wheels of justice move very slowly.
Right.
Look at things in 20-year time increments. If you look at WorldCom, the CEO of WorldCom, Bernie Ebbers, 25 years in jail.
Mm-hmm.
He's in jail. But it took them 4 or 5 years to actually get the court case to happen and to get him indicted.
Well, the Libby case is going to be very interesting because it looks like he is not going to go down easily and quietly. He wants to take a few people down with him. So we'll see what happens.
One wonderful thing about Republicans is they're rats, and then when you get one of them in a situation where they feel threatened, they'll rat on everybody else because they don't have any ethics.
Well,
they'll just tear everybody else apart, so it'll be like rats jumping off a sinking ship.
No honor among thieves, I guess. You know, who else? God, how many other people is this?
Tom Noe.
I'm just going to bring him up. He was indicted on 53 counts, including forgery, money laundering, and theft. That was the whole CoinGate thing.
CoinGate, he built $10 million. He convinced the Bureau of Workmen's Compensation to take all these coins, and then somehow the coins just didn't show up. And so next thing you know, $10 million is missing. And we don't know if Tom took it or whatever, but coincidental with the coins missing, Tom would write a check to these Republicans, to Robert Ney, the senator from Ohio, to the Governor Bob Taft, which was brought up on ethics. So what CoinGate brought out is the whole pay-to-pay scheme, Joe, which I'd love for you to talk about. The whole, you know, even Tom DeLay is that, you know, you give money to a Republican, and then what you get are contracts back, and it starts this endless cycle of favors.
Right.
That's just so corrupt.
Yeah, and they're really good at that. It's a Republican welfare machine in operation, because that's really what it is. It's a big welfare
that's
machine.
Great.
And what do we have? Ooh, that was, excuse me there, a little belch there. And what we have there is, what was I going to say? See, I belch and I forget. I belched out my idea.
Do you have a caller?
Isn't that bad? Do I have a caller? No, I don't have a caller.
Okay.
I'm just talking here.
Okay.
Well, you know, and the big reason why we don't get any results on this is a part of it is just because of the way the press is handling it.
You know what? Amy Goodman was just now in Atlanta for a Damo Smith fundraiser. Amy Goodman is so brilliant. I love her to death. She said, "We are not the silent majority. We are the silenced majority,"
right,
silenced by the corporate media. And I thought that was just, she hit the nail on the head. She said the media is more powerful than bombs, more powerful than weapons of mass destruction. And in America, the media has been deployed by the Pentagon, and we, the citizens, need to take it back.
Well, let me do this, because I don't know if we have time for this in this segment or not. But no, we don't. We'll get to it in the next segment. But we're going to have something that kind of proves that. Going on right there. You know, and the thing is, the White House press corps didn't even ask, with all the stuff about Bush, they didn't ask McClellan one thing at all.
They haven't yet?
They didn't speak to him about the
Do you think that they're afraid? Do you think they're being threatened, Joe?
I don't know.
I mean, what kind of stupidity is that?
I don't know. I really don't know. But, you know, listen, tell you what. Why don't we take a little break? And we'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe radio show here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of my grandmother is also my lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois.
Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write...
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
All right, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, and all that stuff. The number, again, for those who want to call, is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON or 1-877-443-2366. And I know we've got a caller online. If you just hang on just for a minute, we want to play this because this is... because this is something that just came up last week, and I just got the sound clip from that. Now, you wonder why we can't get anything done in this. And I want you to listen to this clip. This is from Hardball with Chris Matthews. This is between takes, or before Tom DeLay comes on. So we're going to hear Chris Matthews talking with Tom DeLay just before they went on the air. if you can, fire that up, please.
In this new focus group stuff on the candidates?
No, I haven't.
It's great stuff.
Really?
I'll send it to you. It's great. Yeah, it's great stuff.
Really?
Hillary, John Kerry, all these guys, all Democrats.
And
how they do. And the Frank Luntz did it. And
who I like.
Hillary did not do well.
Really?
Kerry did well.
You're kidding.
I am not kidding. They didn't like Edwards. They thought he was a rich lawyer pretending to care about
too
poor
slick.
People.
Yeah.
15 seconds. Stand by,
Hillary was know-it-all. I don't know what.
Nothing worse
seconds.
Than a woman
who
would.
Thanks. I owe you one. I owe you two.
No, you don't.
Today and last night. No,
yeah.
I do.
I appreciate.
God, I owe you one. Isn't that awful? How much money does Chris Matthews make? And here he is. He's giving Democratic information to Tom DeLay, and there's not, you can't see, cause, you know, there was a video, you can't see because he was like, and DeLay's like all smiles, you know, he's so nice, and you know, what I wanted to know is how Matthews can talk with DeLay's schlong in his mouth. I can say schlong, I think I can say schlong, but how does Matthews talk like that? How do all of them talk with Bush's thing in their mouths? That's what I want to know, because that's all they're doing. They're just blowing everybody off.
They're bootlickers is what they are.
God, and that, you know, and it's Matthews makes what? High six figures, maybe seven figures. And he's such a tool. He is such a tool.
He's not even good at what he does.
Okay, well, listen, we got some phone calls. We got Wayne from West Virginia on line one. Wayne, come on in. Welcome to the Cup of Joe show.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Fine. How are you, Wayne?
I'm doing good. Listen,
you don't sound like you're from West Virginia.
Pardon me?
You don't sound like you're from West Virginia.
I'm not originally. I'm a Pittsburgh boy.
That's what I figured. Pittsburgh or Chicago or something like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. But I'm a West Virginian now, man. You know, I was never very far away. So, but listen, I tried to send you an email, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, a month ago. I guess I had the wrong address, or I don't know if you just got it and chose to ignore me. I don't know. But, you were on Bob's show one night. You were saying that, you know, that Democrats were, trying to, kind of fooling themselves in that they were going to win back the House or the Senate in 2006.
Yeah,
and I totally disagree with you.
Why
and,
is that?
You know, you said something about, you know, we have to work and that, but, you know, you can't be promising people that we're going to win because then they get let down again. And, you know, my point is I'm involved in politics. I try to organize people. You know, I try to get people involved. And, you know, it's extremely hard to get people involved and tell them, but now you're not going to win this time. But if you'll work real hard for the next 4 years, maybe we'll work in 2008, or we'll win in 2008, or 2008. And in light of everything that's happened in the last month, I wanted to know, do you still feel that we are not going to take back at least the House?
I still feel that way, and I'll tell you exactly why. It has nothing to do with our efforts. Okay, first of all, and I applaud you for being active in politics, and that's what we really need. We need more people to get active. But the problem is that there's far too much gerrymandering. And for those of you who don't know who gerrymandering is, that's designing a congressional district for purely political reasons. There's too much incumbency, and there's too little support from the so-called professional media for us to get our message. If you were basing it on actual, you know, real elections where people really got a chance to vote and make their piece and say their piece, then I would think we would have taken, Bush never would have gotten the White House in the first place. We would have had Al Gore in there, and then Al Gore probably would have been reelected, because I think Al Gore is a great guy, although he could have fought harder. You have to build a foundation. Is a thing. Even the Republicans, with all the money and the power that they have, they didn't get where they are now overnight. They started in the mid to late 70s, and they had to tell their people, we're going to have to hold off, and we take the victories where we get them. And I think we should fight. I think a lot of people misinterpret that into saying that we should just quit and give up. I don't say that. I'm saying you have to fight, but you have to take your victories where you can get them. Now, I've predicted. Now, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. You know, if it works that way and we win, that's fine. Hey, I'd love to be wrong on this, but I don't see it happening because of it. And, of course, even with all that, there's still Diebold.
And, you know, and I agree with you to a certain extent. But I think, I mean, you know, and I mean, the last two elections were stolen from us. The last two presidential elections were stolen. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
So how do you fix that?
Well, I think
it's not about getting people to the polls, because we have enough people going to the polls.
Well, to my solution to that is, number one, public financing, and the other two is paper ballots.
Oh, sure, but how are we going to get that without the polls? You know, it's kind of like a vicious circle. You know, you need one thing.
Well, the first thing we have to do is win back either the Senate or the House, and I prefer the House, because if we win back the House, then that's where articles of impeachment are introduced.
Okay, well, here's my question to you then. Okay, here's my quick question. Let's say that we do take the House, and let's say in fact it goes wildly in our favor in 2006, that we take the Senate and the House. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think the current Democratic leadership has the cojones to do what needs to be done? That's my question.
That the only way we'll know that is by taking back one, you know, the House or the Senate or both. If we take back the House, then we can truly hold people accountable.
They well, I know we have some
no
people
longer
that
have any that. Excuses. We won't have to listen about if they don't have any chairmanships, they don't have any power, they have to meet in the basement. All those excuses will be gone. If
That's
we
true.
Control the House, you now have, you're the head of all the committees. You know, you could appoint all your chairmen. And then we can hold people accountable, and if those people don't do what they're supposed to do when they have the power, then we could remove them in 2008.
Well, I certainly hope that happens. And I mean, I'm not saying that I want bad things to happen, but I take the cynical point of view for a reason, and it just lets people know how difficult the road is and how difficult the fight is. And it does take a time. And this is why I think what Howard Dean is doing is such a good thing, because he's taking his time. He is building a state-by-state foundation for the Democratic Party. And it does take some time. You can't build these movements up overnight. Like I said, the Republicans didn't do theirs overnight either. So we have to take the victories where we can get them, but we have to build towards it. And I agree with you 100% as far as what we need to do.
I agree, too. And Howard, I lived in Vermont for 18 years before I came to Vermont. I remember when Howard Dean became governor. I met him in Charleston here not too long ago. I think he's one of the best things that's happened to the Democratic Party in a long time. But one thing you also have to keep in mind, we also have the Republicans working for us at this particular point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they are doing a wonderful job.
Well, there's such a bunch of keystone cops.
Every day is, you know, a new revolution about something. And as far as the gerrymandering and all that, I mean, that could be carried so far. If there's a groundswell of people that are totally disgusted with the Republican Party and, you know, the way they have governed, I think all that goes out the window. And I'm predicting that we're taking the House back in 2006.
Well, I certainly hope you're right, and I really do. But I'm going to remain cynical on this, and I agree with you. And listen, it was great to have you on the show, but we got to take a little break. And nice to have you on the show, and we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. It was a tough call for a top Republican hypocrite. It always is. That was John McCain cozying up to Jerry Falwell after offering up a blistering criticism of him in the 2000 election. Talk about rank opportunism as McCain seeks the 2008 GOP nomination. Looks like the Straight Talk Express has become permanently derailed. But we had to once again choose Nino the Fixer Scalia as our award winner this year. We won't go over all his past hypocrisies, although we're still dumbfounded about how he told a Jewish audience last year that no Christian leader had ever persecuted Jews. Hey, Nino, does the name Adolf Hitler ring a bell? Last week, however, the Boston Herald caught Nino behaving very badly. He gave a reporter the Italian gesture for go F yourself, denied it, and then the Herald printed a photo proving that Nino was lying. So here we have a Supreme Court justice, a religious fanatic who belongs to the mystical Opus Dei Catholic Fundamentalist Society, being a role model to children and Americans by giving the equivalent of the finger to a journalist. And then, just a few weeks back, he said anyone who doesn't understand him or agree with him is an idiot. And then he told an audience in Europe that the detainees in Guantanamo were all guilty and didn't deserve legal rights, but refused to recuse himself from a case before the Supreme Court to determine this very issue. We have to pause here because it is incomprehensible how this man is on the Supreme Court. He doesn't believe in justice. He only believes in Nino Scalia. Just as Bush thinks he is the government, Scalia thinks he is the Constitution. Forget the facts. Besides which, the guy behaves like a common thug and is a crude, rude, and roguish bore. Oh yeah, and he led the coup that stole a presidential election. Is this someone who should be sitting on the nation's highest court? For all these reasons and more, Nino the Fixer Scalia stands out as our BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. Woof. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced, etc., etc., etc. We know the deal. By the way, that music is Puffy Yami Yumi, and that is some of the music that they played on the New Teen Titans cartoon. And I really kind of like that kind of old-style rock and roll, you know, just basic drums and guitar as well, in a way. I really, really like that. The number for people to call in is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON or 1-877-443-2366. And we have Spike on the line from Eastern Pennsylvania. Hi, Spike. Welcome to the Cup of Joe show.
Hey, Gonzo greetings, Joe. Great to hear you having more than a few seconds of a segment there.
Woo.
Yeah, normally I'm just used to hearing your quick little commentary during shows, and it's actually nice to hear you last more than a 30-second piece.
Well, you know, the thing about doing those reports is it's actually a little bit more difficult for me because I really have to time everything and I have to write everything out specifically. But I'm glad you're here on the show, and I'm glad you're a fan, glad you're listening. So what can I do for you? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I find it very interesting that the corporate media is getting more and more into this whole immigration policy story, while a lot of other things are sliding under the radar, mainly the tanking economy. Any excuse to not mention how bad the economy is going, or to ham up things, like, you know, of course, every Christmas time, they always talk about how great the economy is, which is no feces genius. I mean, it's temporary Christmas jobs. They're going to go away.
And, well, you know, what they like to do is they like to talk about the first shopping day having a real big splish, because that's what people do. They rush in, they get the real big sales, and then nobody does any shopping anymore, and you never hear one word about how bad things are after that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or you hear them saying how puzzled they are because no one else is shopping. It's like, well, when all your sales are the day after Thanksgiving, who's going to buy anything any other day?
And things are getting worse for working people. I mean, you know, who has the buying power they did 15, 20 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. I live here in Easton, which is probably the Lehigh Valley. A lot of fans of music may remember Billy Joel wrote a song about this area called Allentown.
Great song.
About 20 minutes away from me. And to this day, Allentown, that song still describes this region. I mean, I used to live over by the 13th Street exit for Easton. There used to be silk mills there. They closed in the 80s and went south to you know, I think the Carolinas at the time, and now I believe that, that last I heard that they literally left the country, the company that had at one time dumped, you know, Easton and headed for the south to save money. And, you know, of course, all part of NAFTA, which I do partly blame the Clinton-Gore administration for carrying the Republican Party's dirty work there. But, you know, and it's funny, you know, what they are trying to pass off as news, like the whole Katie Couric going to CBS. First of all, who cares? And second of all, I guess CBS has gone from Dan Rather and wanting to cover news to now they're just going to be basically puff news. I mean,
well, you know, they did a good job swift boating Dan Rather, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, especially no one could ever prove the story was wrong. They could only prove that the document was wrong, and that's what they ran with, everyone.
And what do you expect when you got guys like Chris Matthews who are openly, you know, helping out Republicans and corrupt Republicans at that, the worst kind?
Yeah, who was the? There was someone right at the end that said they thanked him for something. Who was that that said that? I couldn't tell that voice.
Oh, that was Matthews. That was Matthews thanking DeLay for being on the show and you know for whatever else he's doing to him in between takes.
Oh, okay, yeah. Speaking of which, Tom DeLay, the king of the rats has left the nest temporarily.
Well, you know, here's the thing. He's going on. He's going to be a preacher now. So he just basically moved from one division to another division of the Republican money-making machine. So he's going to make a lot of money, you know, railing off about God with people. And, you know, I feel sorry for him because they're getting suckered. I mean, their lives are getting worse. They're the ones that are losing these jobs, too. And the reason why the economy is tanking is because everybody's moving these manufacturing jobs, which used to be the bread and butter of this American economy. They're all being moved over to other places. I mean, the South used to brag that we're getting all these jobs from the North, and now they're losing these jobs to Mexico. That's what happened to my job. I worked for Siemens, a big manufacturing plant here in Tucker, Georgia, and they shut down and they moved that plant to Mexico. And I lost that job just before Christmas 2004.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's what kills me up here is there's a revitalization in this area. And what everyone's doing is they're taking over old warehouses and stuff and making luxury condominiums, which, yeah, I mean, that's good. I mean, the buildings aren't going to go to waste. But in the same, after the initial construction work is done, there's not going to be, even if they have little restaurants and stuff, they're not going to do that much more for the economy. And I keep kind of trying to rally the point around here to people that, look, there's a whole generation. You know, I'm 26 years old. There's a whole generation of us who are going to grow up. And, the only blue-collar labor we're going to have is, you know, mopping the floors at some place, you know, which, of course, we're not going to be able to afford anything on those salaries unless we live with 20 of our cousins in a one-bedroom apartment, and that's the only reason the foreigners can live on those wages. You know, and of course, that's the funny thing, this whole debate of this whole, you know, illegal immigration stuff, they forget that simple basic point of explaining, well, how come these immigrants can live on these low wages and the Americans can't? You know, if we lived in motel rooms, you know, four or five sharing a motel room meant to hold two people, yeah, maybe we could live on minimum wage for a living. But, you know, obviously, you know, we need cars to get to work, you know, especially since mass transit's on the decline in this country. You know, we have people who have children they have to send to college and things like that. I mean, school costs money. And, you know, a few months ago there was a thing that came out, I can't remember which media outlet reported it, I think the AP, no one really mentioned it, that said that in every major market in the United States of America, you cannot afford a one-bedroom apartment, make a minimum wage.
I've been talking about this for a long time, and actually not even a minimum wage. If you're talking a $9 or $10 an hour job, you cannot afford a single apartment. You know, my dad lived through the Depression, and he used to talk about this, and he said, this was back like 88, 89, when first Bush was in charge. And he said, in a lot of ways, now is worse than it used to be in the Depression. Because during the Depression, if you had a job, well, jobs were hard to come by. If you had one, even a low-paying job, you could afford to pay rent. You can afford to put food on the table and all that stuff. Nowadays, one person cannot afford a single-bedroom apartment. I had an argument with a friend of mine. You were talking about the condo thing, and they're doing a lot of that here in Atlanta, where they've got areas where they're building these big condos, and they're trying to pretend that they've got low-income stuff in there as well. But it's there's very, very few. Maybe I think I counted like 30 apartments that could possibly be rented by people who were working at all these places in the little shopping malls that they have there. You know, you're talking about places like Old Navy or Target or movie theaters. We're talking about people who are making at best $7 or $8 an hour. And nobody can live on that. It's better than minimum wage, but not by much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and you're absolutely at best $8 an hour. I mean, I have a friend who, He's been working for well over a decade at a ski resort in the Poconos. Every year he gets a 25-cent raise. He still has yet to make it to $10, you know? I mean, and he's a manager. And, you know, that's the thing, too, is you get people that are literally managers that are top of the food chain where they work, and they're still not making double digits an hour there. You know,
they give manager is just a title. It doesn't really mean anything like it used to.
And the difference now in all of this is that the CEOs, when they used to make maybe $300,000-$400,000 a year, are now making $3-$10 million a year.
Yeah,
I mean, right around the corner from you is Bryn Mawr. I had a friend that lived in a $1 million house. She was VP of a company I cannot name. Well, guess what? The company was brought up on charges of overcharging the government. And this woman flew around in private jets. She drove a Jaguar, lived in a $1 million house. And she was a complete criminal. She got brought up, I mean, her company, not her, but her company got brought up on charges of overcharging the government. So the difference is we've got criminals as CEOs, criminals as VPs, and they're bilking you guys, the managers. It's just totally wrong.
And they're always stealing stuff. You ever see the movie Casino? And there was a scene in Casino that really used to crack me up because they had these big businessmen who came in to gamble, and there was one Oriental guy, Asian guy, who come in, and he was stealing towels from the hotel. This guy was a billionaire, and he's stealing towels from the hotel. And I know these rich people do stuff like
they
this.
Do.
They want everything for free, which is one of the reasons why they accumulate so much money, is because they're such tightwads. I used to work pizza delivery, and I'll guarantee you that if you work pizza delivery, you go to a rich person's house,
oh,
you
yeah.
ain't getting nothing for a tip. But the poor people would tip like crazy, which is probably why they're poor.
I still encounter it. I deliver for a national chain up here in Easton. And up in the suburbs, it's amazing. I mean, every once in a while I go to a big house and someone actually is a good tipper in a big house, but almost 95% of the time, you know, you go to these houses that start out at $500,000 and up, you'll be lucky to walk away with more than $2 cash as a tip, you know, and then meanwhile you'll go to this place that looks run down and looks like a goat threw up in their front lawn and you get $4 or $5 out of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Reagan used to talk about this like being the trickle-down economy, that you give the rich people money and it kind of trickles down. But, you know, there was used to be a saying when I was in the Air Force, you know, stuff rolls downhill. You know, there's only one thing that trickles down to us, and I think we all know what that is, right?
Oh, yeah. And whoever's at the bottom gets covered the most, and that right now, that is the working class of America, said.
That's right. And it's going to continue that way. Okay, listen, Spike, it was great having you on the show. I appreciate your call. And call in again sometime, okay?
Hey, no problem. Good luck with the show, man.
Thank you, sir. Spike. All right, that was Spike. It's great having calls.
It's fun.
It's really weird. I'm not used to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's absolutely right. I mean, working people nowadays... when they shut down my plant at Siemens, there were a lot of people there who had been there for 15 or 20 years, and they absolutely had no clue for work. And I feel bad for them. because you know, some of them got real snotty about hanging on to their job. And they were always talking about how, you know, well, you know, because I wanted to be part of the union. I wanted to be active. And you know me, I'm Mr. Political, Mr. Fight, Fight, Fight. And they weren't like that at all. And they were like, just be happy you have a job, shut up and don't rock the boat. And I kept trying to tell them, man, you can lose your job too. And, you know, guess what? They lost their job.
It's sad that people graduating from college don't have the opportunities I had. When I was graduating from Georgia Tech, literally everyone that graduated computer science, we were looking at 50, 60, 70K jobs a year, fresh out of college. And that was not abnormal. Well, for a college kid now to get 50, 60, they're like, I mean, they're lucky to get 20, 30K, maybe. And then, if not, they may be unemployed for 2 years.
Well, a lot of that is pretty typical. I mean, the market did get flooded. I mean, you've talked to me about doing some IT work. But the truth of the matter is, and I do try for stuff like that, but there's so many people out there who do IT a lot better than I do. I mean, I'm pretty good at it.
Well, a person in India that charges 25 cents a day is going to beat you out all day long.
And, you know, Spike mentioned NAFTA. And the thing about NAFTA is I do support NAFTA in principle. As far as getting, you know, all this, because I really do believe in the global economy, in the global political system that eventually we're going to have. I call it the Pax Liberalis, the free peace, as opposed to the Pax Americana, as the neocons want it. But I really believe if you're going to have that kind of thing, you really need to have global labor standards.
Yes.
Okay, and because we don't have that, I mean, I don't mind companies moving to other countries for good reasons, like, for example, it's cheaper for them to build and manufacture something in the country where they want to sell it. You know, I got no problem for that, but people really, you know, the companies really should base that upon those kinds of things and not just where can we get the cheapest labor. You know, and the Mexicans who got the jobs at Siemens, they're going to eventually lose their jobs to people in Vietnam and in other places. So, okay, well, listen, let's take a little break. We'll be right back to talk about Cynthia McKinney and her adventures in the White House, or at the Congress, I should say. And we'll be back with more with the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network. Say it right, Joe.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hello, can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, he's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Okay, and we're back on the Cover Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I'm Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man. I'm here with Phyllis Euster, activist and friend. The number for those who want to call is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON or 1-877-443-2366. And I'm glad to be live. Let me give a big shout-out to all of my friends in the Bart Cop chat room who are listening in and all my friends at the My Left Wing chat room who are also listening in. And again, I'm not on the head-on chat room because it is the Java application and my computer system isn't really good enough to go Java while running Skype and all the other stuff that we run. And I don't know if I should be revealing state secrets like that. I do need some new equipment. And again, if you do want to donate, Either equipment or money. I mean, you know, I can use all the help I can get. The equipment is what I need the money for. You can do so. Go to my blog, cupojoe.blogspot.com, and you can click on the donation link there. Or you can email me, joevec@bellsouth.net. I try to answer every email that I get. Sometimes it takes me a little while, but I do that. I do so every chance I get. I want to thank Bob Kincaid and his lovely wife, Agnes, for producing the show here. They're doing a wonderful job. We're more than halfway through.
Awesome.
We're more than halfway through. And
I'm dying to talk about Cynthia.
It's going. Oh, yeah, we're going to talk. Because this is an incident that happened over the last week. And for those of you who don't know, actually, I live in Cynthia McKinney's district.
DeKalb County.
Yeah, and I am actually a constituent of hers, and I voted for her, and I'm proud to have voted for her, and I actually think she is a very good congressperson, but she doesn't get, because she's basically ignored by the Democratic leadership as well as obviously the Republicans, and you know, they were talking about this on The Daily Show, and Stewart was kind of ragging on her, and that really kind of angered me, because, you know, I realize what Jon Stewart does, and you know, I don't have a problem with him going on Democrats as well as Republicans, but you know, he started calling her, you know, crazy, and it's like she's not crazy.
First of all, she's the first person that identified Bush as being this guy that was going to be a problem by pointing out that his father sits on all these Pentagon companies, Pentagon-funded companies. But here's my perspective, Joe, and I think I see it.
Before you do the perspective, let's make people understand what actually happened first, because otherwise people don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
She was entering the Congress, and she had her ID badge on. She didn't have her congressional pin, but the congressional pin is no big deal.
Nobody wears it.
Nobody wears it. And she had changed her hairdo. And she was stopped by a guard trying to come in, even though she had her ID on her. And she was stopping. And this had not been the first time it happened. And apparently she's the only one, because there are 14 black women in the United States Congress. That's 14 out of 435, by the way, which is not a...
She wasn't just stopped, Joe. She was grabbed.
She was grabbed. And that was
grabbed.
The thing. And I saw this commentary, and I'm going to read part of this. This is from Avedon Carroll on The Sideshow, which is a really, really nice website, although she doesn't link to me any near as much as I would like to, hint, hint. But she's out of England, and she does a fantastic job, and she was talking about this incident, and she was cruising, in her words, the various common threads, and she was looking at the different rationales or people were coming up with for why it's all McKinney's fault. And it was amazing to her how far some people would bend over backwards to find something wrong with her. You know, Cynthia McKinney's not a very tall person. So you can imagine she's had to deal with stuff in her life where, you know, she might be attacked or she's got to protect herself. And I don't know the full story of everything that happened. But it seems pretty obvious to me that there is, whether it's subliminal, whether it's overt or covert, there's racism involved in this. Because could you imagine if this had happened to Tom DeLay? Could you imagine the uproar there would be? So here we have the Republicans singing the praises of the congressional police guys, simply because they harassed Cynthia McKinney. As far as the Republicans are concerned, they'd like to keep her out completely, I bet. But I'm sorry, let's get you. You said you had a perspective on this. Let's get to your perspective.
My perspective is real, real simple, Joe. This dumbass cop, sorry, but he is being paid to recognize these members. So is he so dumb that somebody can't show him a book of 200 senators and he can't recognize their faces? So number one, how come no one's saying that the cop, A, didn't do his job, okay? And B, she was not trespassing. She has a physical right to walk through whatever, anything she wants to do. She has a right to walk, and she was not trespassing. So A, he had no right to physically accost her. So at the point that he did physically accost her, look, I used to work for cops. There was all kinds of sensitivity training that you never grab anybody. That is against the law. It doesn't matter that you're a cop and you wear a badge. And first of all, let's just talk about the Capitol cops. These are people that physically hurt Cindy Sheehan when they put her in jail. They physically roughed her up. The Capitol cops are a subdomain of real cops in that they're controlled by the White House. Who owns the White House? President Bush. So these Capitol cops are complete They're like a militaristic force that Bush has complete control over. So remember that when you know anything that they're going to do in terms of bringing up charges to Cynthia. Here's what I don't understand about Cynthia. She's a kick-ass and take-names kind of gal. Why isn't she, A, claiming self-defense, B, demanding that they fire this man who couldn't recognize her, C, I appreciate that she apologized. I think the reason she apologized is she realizes the Capitol cops are a militaristic force that are controlled, and there is no rule of law. They're not going to follow any rule of law. They're going to bring up anything they can to put McKinney in jail because they don't like the fact that she tells the truth about Bush. For instance, McKinney's favorite thing that when she gets up and speaks is that she asks the question of what did Bush know when he knew it. What did he know, and when did he know it about September 11th? And guess what? He still hasn't answered her question.
Well, he's never going to answer
that question.
But
my attitude is, when people call Cynthia McKinney crazy, it was like calling Howard Dean for his scream. They called him outrageous and crazy. It's a mantra. They have nothing else they can complain about the woman. She's intelligent. She fought for the Kevin and Monica Benderman. Kevin Benderman was the conscientious objector. She wrote letters for them. She calls for the withdrawal from Iraq. She fights for all the hard issues. She's like John Conyers. Guess what? I'm looking to the African American, the Black Caucus, to lead us out of the crap that we're in. They're the only people that stand up. It was so great to see the Black Caucus stand behind Cynthia McKinney. And guess what? In my opinion, those are the only Democrats that matter, and they're the only ones that deserve to get voted back in
office. And the Democratic leadership ran from Cynthia, too. Didn't she just apologize today?
They wouldn't put her back on the Senate Arms Committee. When, the first time she was elected, she sat on the Senate Arms Committee. And who better to talk about?
She's a congresswoman. How come she gets to sit on the Senate thing?
What, she earned her right into that the very first go-round when she got... She lost the second time she went into office, and then she got elected back into office, and guess who wouldn't let her? Nancy Pelosi. And I don't know what kind of witch trial but Cynthia McKinney is more educated, she's more capable, more qualified to be on the Senate Arms Committee than anyone else.
And
I don't
we're glad to have her back too, because you know she was gone for a couple of years because of Majette. And the Republicans crossing over.
She was ranked out of office.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe, the only reason she made it back into office, I'm not kidding, being an election person, I will tell you this. She had paid poll workers at every precinct looking for rigging, looking for shenanigans, and so they didn't dare have the D-Bowl machines programmed her out of office because she was going to create a state.
Well, you know, DeKalb County is the bluest of blue areas in all of Georgia. Probably. We live in the very bluest. That's why I call this the first...
It's also, 70% African-American?
Yeah. Well, this is the First Amendment bunker here in the heart of what would be otherwise downtown Freeperville.
But I think McKinney, I think they're using as a wedge issue the same way they're using immigration. That way they don't have to talk about Bush committing all these crimes. They don't have to talk about delay. Literally... being kicked out of office by... It'd be one thing if he was kicked out of office by people not voting for him or ethics violations. He's being kicked out because the man will go to jail. I mean, he's got three or four other pending criminal cases in the state of Texas.
Okay. Well, you know, this is so much, and it gets me so upset to even try to talk about it. And, you know, I'm not saying Ms. McKinney is perfect. She's not perfect. She's like every politician. She's got her good and her bad. But you know what? She does not deserve... to get treated in the fashion she's been treated. It's just sickening to me that this is happening. And I stand by her. I support her. I voted for her before. I'll vote for her again. And it's sitting there like that. So, anyway, let's take a little break. And we'll be back with some other stuff on the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen apparently there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, but I just thought it was so.
Oh my God.
It was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway. Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chutney.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not
there.
The same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Okay, and we're back on the Cover Joe Radio Show. Let's dance, everybody. I hope you're liking that music, by the way. That's some karaoke stuff that I picked up here and there. And I kind of like the instrumental versions of some of these songs, so long as they're done well. I've heard some really cheesy karaoke stuff. I want to say hi to everybody who's in the Head On Radio chat room. And you can get on the chat room by going to headonradionetwork.com. And click on where it says chat room at the top of the page, and a Java application will open up, and you can get in there and chat with everybody. And I want to say hi to everybody who's been typing in, letting me know that the show is going well. And I'm glad because, you know, I like it when people like the show, because otherwise I wouldn't be on the air very long, would I? He says, all right, get out. Nobody likes you. Move. Get out. Go get somebody else on there. So anyway, we're here with Phyllis Euster, and we were talking about the Cynthia McKinney thing. And, you know, I'm going to say this straight out. It's pure and total racism. There has been racism in this country since the beginning, and it really drives me. You know, black people were brought involuntarily into this country. And, you know, Columbus came over in 1492, and I didn't read about this until just recently. One of the first things he did was grab slaves to bring back over to Europe. You know, and I used to hear the people complaining about Columbus Day, and I thought, why are they complaining about Columbus Day? And then I read this and said, man, no wonder. Is this what white Europeans do? Is this what they're good at? White European Christians, it seems. The best thing that they're good at is stealing people, stealing from people, or stealing people, you know, and taking away their freedoms, taking things away from them. And the whole thing with McKinney is just so totally racist, and it's racist, and it's such an example of the profiling we have today, and it just sickens me that we have this going on now. And God, I get so angry.
Well, even one of the radio stations was saying that they were mad that she pulled the racial card, that Cynthia McKinney stood up and said, "Hey, you know, call it what it is. It's racial profiling." And he said that he was mad because he felt black people had a duty to tell the white people when it really happened, and that he thought for sure that this was not racial profiling. And I thought, here's a white guy that can tell Cynthia McKinney, who got physically grabbed, which probably didn't feel good. I don't care if you're a cop. I don't care if you wear a badge. In a system where there's no rule of law, cops can turn out to be buttheads. They can turn out to be someone that grabs you against your will. You know, we've had situations where, you know, the Homeland Security went and just grabbed a teacher the other day. That was on the news. And he said, you don't think it's gonna happen until it happens to you. Well, it happened to Cynthia McKinney. And the bottom line is that our brute force police force now have become a tool of the dictatorship society. And you know what? I don't care if she walked through the thing. If they're worried, I hate it when Republicans say, oh, Democrats are terrible at Homeland Security. They're terrible at securing, because there's Cynthia walking right through, not caring that this could be anybody walking through. Well, you know what? Anybody is not Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia McKinney is a congressman that this guy should have recognized. He should have been fired immediately, and there was no news. There's no news in this.
And you know, not just being a black woman, but being Cynthia McKinney in particular. Okay, we have Peter from Tallahassee on line one. Hi, Pete. Welcome to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Hi, Pete. You there?
Yes, I'm here now. Great. I've got to tell you how much I'm enjoying the show. We're all enjoying it over in the head-on chat room, and I've got to tell you that it's going very, very well. It's so great to hear your dialoguing with people. It brings a whole new dynamic to the show versus only having a short period of time to get so many thoughts out, and they come rapid fire, and I understand why. But I'm really enjoying this. I didn't know how it would be, but it's great. Thank you.
And, well, you know, the thing is, I'm like with Bob. I like having conversations, and it just makes it easier. And this is conversation radio. This is where we get to talk and think things out, and not just spew talking points.
Well, I agree, and I'm glad too. You brought up the problem about the Java and not being in the room, and it was because the PC was a little bit older and wasn't able to do all those things at the same time. You know, a bunch of us have extra older machines sitting around that would run Java as a single task, just dandy, and I'm sure someone will get on that right away. So I think that need can be filled, because we'd sure like to see you there too.
Well, you know, if you want to go on my blog, cupojoe.blogspot.com, on the donations page, there's a little link for that. I actually point to a website where you can see some refurbished computers. Or I even mentioned that if you have old computers lying around your house, what I just need is a faster chip. We were a little worried that the program I'm using to do the show wasn't going to be enough for it. And we haven't had any problems with it, thankfully. Yeah, but I want to avoid running too many applications all at once, and I've always seemed to have problems with Java. But listen, it's great that you're there in the chat room, and again, I wish I could be there with you guys, although I really couldn't participate very much.
Well, we understand. I did want to, if there's time, I wanted to get into a little bit about the Bush administration and the changes that I have seen. Is there much time?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, great. What I want to talk about is, you know, growing up gay in the South is a particularly different colored horse.
And, amen.
I'm 53 now, and I go back a long way. I go back to the time here in North Florida. I'm in Tallahassee. North Florida is really just an extension of South Georgia. I go back to the time when police departments regularly cruised through gay club parking lots and wrote down tag numbers. Any private party that went on at an individual's home anywhere in town, the police, in a smaller town like this, the police knew where every gay person lived. And if there was a number of cars there, the parties were always raided on the pretense of, you know, having underage drinkers, and people were carted off to jail and just a lot of harassment. That's how it started here. Later in my 20s, I joined the Gay Liberation Front and several other gay organizations. And I remember a time when there was dialogue. I remember a time large numbers of us met at Florida State University in a conference room with folks from various churches here in Tallahassee, the mainstream churches, and there was an actual dialogue about being gay and how it related to Scripture and on. It was a wide-ranging conversation. I remember when there was dialogue, but what the Bush administration has done to us is degenerated to the point where that is, the dialogue is completely out of the question. We're so divided now, and so sure of being biblically right and having God on our side, that no one is willing to listen anymore. When we call these people the regressive party, we're absolutely right. We're rapidly heading back to the early days that I remember when there was regular harassment. There's just no end to the contempt that I have for these people.
Well, you have to understand what the leaders are doing is simply preying on people's fears. People fear things that are different. People have been afraid of homosexuals in this country for ages. And I can never understand. I mean, I'm not gay myself, and I'm not pretending to be anything I'm not. But it's like, it's none of my business what consenting adults do in the privacy of their own homes. People say, well, you know, it's pedophiles, or is it Santorum keeps talking about, well, then we can marry dogs. And it's like, what are you talking about? What does that have to do with anything? And, you know, these biblical people, they use the Bible like a Chinese menu. You know, they choose one from column A and two from column B, and they figure out which ones they want to follow. And one Christian guy was bugging me about it, and I asked him if he liked shrimp or crab or lobster, and he said, yeah, I love that. And I said, well, then you're committing the same abomination as homosexuality, because according to Leviticus, which is where they get this stuff mostly from, according to Leviticus, eating shrimp or lobster or anything that lives in the sea that doesn't have fins is an abomination before the Lord. The same words that they use for homosexuality. And so one guy had a big what's, because you know they have that guy, I forget his name, Reverend Ken Phelps, I think is his name.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets all these kids with a big sign that say, God hates fags. And this one guy had a website called God Hates Shrimp. And it was the same type of the other.
How funny is that? Well, you know, you're absolutely right about that. And my take on that is that the fake Christians, the phony Christians, have without question hijacked the Old Testament God. There's no question of that. But my position is they sure as hell can't have Jesus.
You know, Jesus was a liberal.
Different perspective.
That was the deal. Jesus was a liberal.
His perspective was radical inclusion. And that's not who they talk about.
Right. Well, you know, it's Republican Jesus. You know, as who was saying that? Republican Jesus in the suit and tie, you know, that Jesus would never wear himself.
I think Jesus was a granola lesbian trapped in a man's body.
Bless your heart.
He wore flip-flops and togas, and he was comfortable. What a cool guy. I love
Jesus.
And, you know, here's the thing about Jesus. Jesus never led an army into battle. He never ran a business. He didn't really have a job in the sense of going out working for money. He lived door-to-door. People would basically put him up for food and shelter, you know, for a couple of nights while he preached. You know, and that's the kind of life he lived. I don't have a problem with Jesus. I think Jesus was a great guy. I wish more people would have listened to him. But the problem is with his followers. And once Christianity became official, then like anything else that becomes official, they spend more time trying to preserve their own power than they do doing whatever it was that got them started in the first place. And did you read about this? They just discovered the manuscripts from Judas.
Yes, I've read that.
The testament from that. And, you know, Bart Kopp was one who brought this up. He said, you know, Jesus wasn't, you know, predicting the future about Judas. He was basically giving orders. He was saying, Judas, you're going to go ahead and betray me. And Judas said, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Because Jesus knew what was going to happen to him. And he knew that he had to have somebody doing that. And, you know, I keep thinking of the Matthew Shepard thing.
Me too.
And I know some gays people who are Republicans, and
yeah, go for
you know
that.
I keep telling them Matthew Shepard is not an aberration. Matthew Shepard is what they want. Listen, it's been great having you on the show, but we got to take a break.
I understand, and it's great having you on the network. And conversation radio is going to fix a lot. That's what we've lost, the dialogue.
I hear you, and I hope to bring that back, and I hope to bring back the voice of working people instead of well-paid idiots like the Republican radio talk show hosts are.
Thank you again. Thank you for what you're doing.
Okay, and I guess we're going to go to break here in a couple of seconds. It just, you know, racism against black people, racism against homosexuals. You know, racism against, not racism, but...
But it's all civil rights.
It's all that.
It's all a big bucket of civil rights. Which
and, you know, the other group that nobody likes to talk about are atheists and agnostics. And you know something? People hate atheists and agnostics more than they hate Muslims in this country. So it's really kind of sickening. Okay, here we are. We're going to break now. And we'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe radio show on the Head On Radio Network.
BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. It was a tough call for a top Republican hypocrite. It always is. That was John McCain cozying up to Jerry Falwell after offering up a blistering criticism of him in the 2000 election. Talk about rank opportunism as McCain seeks the 2008 GOP nomination. Looks like the Straight Talk Express has become permanently derailed. But we had to once again choose Nino the Fixer Scalia as our award winner this year. We won't go over all his past hypocrisies, although we're still dumbfounded about how he told a Jewish audience last year that no Christian leader had ever persecuted Jews. Hey, Nino, does the name Adolf Hitler ring a bell? Last week, however, the Boston Herald caught Nino behaving very badly. He gave a reporter the Italian gesture for go F yourself, denied it, and then the Herald printed a photo proving that Nino was lying. So here we have a Supreme Court justice, a religious fanatic who belongs to the mystical Opus Dei Catholic Fundamentalist Society, being a role model to children and Americans by giving the equivalent of the finger to a journalist. And then, just a few weeks back, he said anyone who doesn't understand him or agree with him is an idiot. And then he told an audience in Europe that the detainees in Guantanamo were all guilty and didn't deserve legal rights, but refused to recuse himself from a case before the Supreme Court to determine this very issue. We have to pause here because it is incomprehensible how this man is on the Supreme Court. He doesn't believe in justice. He only believes in Nino Scalia. Just as Bush thinks he is the government, Scalia thinks he is the Constitution. Forget the facts. Besides which, the guy behaves like a common thug and is a crude, rude, and roguish boor. Oh yeah, and he led the coup that stole a presidential election. Is this someone who should be sitting on the nation's highest court? For all these reasons and more, Nino the Fixer Scalia stands out as our BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. Woof. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show here on the Head On Radio Network. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for my personal site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and my email address, if you want to write to me, is joevec@bellsouth.com. .net. And once again, I also want to invite everybody to head on over to the Head On Radio chat room. That's headonradionetwork.com, and you can talk there. And I'm also in the Bart Cop chat room and the My Left Wing chat room, although I haven't really been very active, and all my friends out there I want to give a shout out to. And again, I'm here with Phyllis Euster, activist, and all that. What was that? What was the name of that guy who stood up and talked to Bush? They had him. The guy's name, but the person's making a big deal about this guy. Saying Harry Taylor. Thank you, Bob. Harry Taylor was the guy who, and he stood up and apparently he bugged. I didn't hear the audio clip. I didn't watch the video of it. But the impression I got immediately was that this guy was a plant.
I don't know. What was interesting, he might have been a plant, Joe. What's interesting is Bush actually told everybody to stop making noise and let the man finish. So Bush, but the minute this man started talking negative about Bush, Bush got that, I call it the frat boy, you know, I'm not accountable to you or anybody, look onto your face. And he got this kind of dumbfounded look like, well, who the heck are you to challenge me? He even started looking with his eyes almost like looking for the cops to go get him, you know? But what's great what this man said is that Bush should be ashamed of himself for the asinine things that have happened under his administration.
Well, I think you have to be human to feel shame. And I think Bush has lost whatever little humanity he may have had. I think Bush lost that a long time ago, because obviously people who plan and enact wars like this that kill thousands, tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people, I think they've lost whatever soul they ever had, because it's just sickening that he does this. And I really, if he wasn't a plant, then I think what this is doing is like the situation with Helen Thomas a few days back, where he actually let her ask a question. And see, the thing about it is Bush is down to like 36%, which means you're really talking about his hardcore base. And really, of that 36%, maybe about half of those are his cultists. The other 18% of that, the other 18% are just people who have basically been misinformed, people who watch Fox News all the time, etc., etc., etc. And he's really, really down to his cult supporters. And he is doing everything he can to keep them in the fold, because he needs them desperately at this point. And one of the ways he does that is by showing how tough he is to stand up to these people, that he's going to continue with his bold mission no matter what these evil people are saying about me. And it's all very, it's a big cult of personality that they've built around him. And I'm wondering what's going to happen when 2008 comes and he has to leave office one way or the other. Some guy said that they were going to try to declare martial law, or Bush was going to sign an executive order basically saying that he has to stay in until the war on terror is over. Mayor Giuliani of New York tried to get his term in office extended, you know, after September 11.
Wow.
And you know, they turned him down on that. But if Bush does that, I think he's really gone too far at that. But then again, we'll see. You know, people put up so much with
this
country.
He's gone too far with too many things.
I mean,
he's about to bomb Iran, okay? Nuclear bunker busters. Seymour Hersh just wrote a really good article, and he says that a lot of upper top echelon Pentagon generals are saying that they will quit if Bush does anything in Iran, because they are against the fundamental concept of preemptive nuclear strike in Iran, because they think it will start a firestorm.
Oh my God, you have no idea.
But not only that, when Seymour Hersh, who does his research, and if you read any of his articles, he's a great guy, but they said that southern Iraq is going to light up like a candle, and that there will be strikes in America, Israel, and I believe it. I believe that Iran, the guy that's running Iran, is a nutcase. I do. I believe anybody.
But how did he get into office? The only reason he got into office in the first place. Well, I'm not even talking about that, but the reason why he got in, because the guy before him, Khatami, was fairly moderate by Iranian standards. And the reason why this guy got in, and I forget his name, the reason why this guy got in was because Bush is so nuts, the Iranian people, I guess, figured that they needed to get an even nuttier guy to counter that.
Yeah.
So you have all these countries.
Ripple effect.
Yeah, yes. I have all these countries in a big race to elect and put in office the craziest people.
Do you remember the Iranian woman at Macy's in the polo section, right, Joe?
Yeah,
and
nice lady.
Nice lady. And she said, your president is such a nutso, and so is ours, but we don't like our leader, and we don't like your leader.
Let me tell you something.
We have two leaders that don't represent the people.
This is what I told her. This is what I'm going to tell everybody
out there. And then we're going to get the boss falling on our heads.
This is what I told her. This is what I'm going to tell everybody out there. Okay, the Iranian people understand what's going on. The American people, most of the American people anyway, understand what's going on. Because foreigners, other people out there, they understand that Americans are essentially good people. It's the American government that's messed up. And you know something? I talk about working people and I talk about working class people. As far as working class people are concerned, we have no nation. You know what I'm saying? We're all alike. We all want the same things, maybe slightly different specifics, but we all want the same things. We want to be able to go out and work and support ourselves and support our families and to provide a better future for our children. All of us want that. And whether or not it means you're a Muslim or a Christian or an atheist or a Jew or anybody, they all want basically the same thing. It's our governments. It's our so-called leaders that get us to do this. And the reason why the leaders want to do this so often is because they profit from it. They profit from the power they get. They profit from the money that they get. And there's going to come a time in the future where enough of the people are just going to say, we've had it. We're not fighting your wars anymore. We're not doing this anymore. And no wars are going to happen after that because you're not going to be able to get anybody to fight. And, you know, it's not going to be any time soon. It probably won't be in our lifetimes. It's the Pax Liberalis that I'm talking about. And, you know, we were talking about immigrants earlier. You know, when you're talking about a global economy, then there are no immigrants.
But have you noticed how many immigrants, millions in L.A., are walking in the streets protesting this immigration bill?
And good for them. And the reason why they're doing that is not for themselves in particular, but because a lot of these people who are regular, you know, citizens of this country have relatives, have friends, and other people who are illegals, and the law that they wanted to pass, which didn't get through, thankfully, would have made it a criminal act for them to help any of them. And that's ridiculous. That's a really... And, you know, and this is what they love to do. They love to set us against each other. The people on top love to get us...
But it's actually pulling us together, because you remember April 1st, our peace movement, we had people representing the immigration movement, we had people representing the Gold Star families.
Right.
So all of a sudden, the peace movement and the immigration movement, believe it or not, they're coming together. That produces quite a few people.
But we still have to reach the point, and I think the problem with progressives still is that they don't understand that we have to think bigger. I think a lot of progressives in America are still looking for problems to solve in America. I think, you know, you talk about getting things fixed, I think you have to start talking about on a global level. And I think we have to start this Progressive Roots Foundation across the entire world. Because I'll tell you something, I am not only for the American worker. I am for the Iraqi worker. I am for the Iranian worker. I am for people in Bangladesh. I'm for people in Germany. I'm for people in France. I'm for everybody. Okay? And I want the same kind of standard of living for every person in the world. I want the same equality of opportunity for everybody in the world as we get here in America, as we used to have here in America.
Two things that would create jobs overnight, Joe, is if the governments of the world focused on a space race, a good space race, not to put nuclear weapons up there, but actual colonies, actual, you know. And then the second thing that would absolutely generate jobs overnight is if they just gave education away for free. Because there are 180,000 IT jobs at all times that are open in Atlanta, because people can't fill the jobs. They're not trained. So it kills me that there are $20 an hour jobs without people to fill them. It's because they're not trained.
Well, there's a lot of things going on, a lot of things that could be fixed. But we have to wrap up. Time is running out here. I want to thank Phyllis Euster for joining us on the show. And I wish I really, you know, it's been 2 hours and it's gone by very, very quickly. And I want to thank Phyllis for joining me, and I want to thank Bob and Agnes for producing the show. I want to thank Ben Birch of the White Rose Society for providing this whole thing. Because, you know, the Head On Radio Network is part of the White Rose family. And again, I want to thank everybody who's listening in on the chat rooms and who is listening in their homes and streaming on the computer and all the other stuff. And I hope you like the show, and I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you keep coming back for more, because I enjoy doing this, and I like having the conversation radio. And we'll...